This is a recording of ISIS International from the Global NGO Forum on Beijing Plus 15, held in New York in February 2010.
ISIS International, documenting feminist visions, creating critical communications, and strengthening social movements.
I hope you're wide awake after lunch. I'm glad that Mira Zoe woke you up. But I think it takes more than that to go through my presentation. I wanted to go back quickly to the earlier panel about the process that led us to Beijing and the importance of that project process, just very quickly. When we started out in Mexico in 1975, we were a very small group. There was very little preparation. I remember that there was a 16-member consultative committee in March of 1975. I had the honor and privilege of being a member of that committee. And within 2 weeks in New York, we prepared a draft world plan of action. And I'm proud again to say that this was based on a draft that was prepared by UN. And there was not really much to the whole process. And I think there were something like around less than 2,000 NGOs. And most of the VIPs that were there were what we called wifey pools. And that is wives of presidents, princesses, royalty, and so forth. And things changed very quickly. The earlier panel, Charlotte referred to the importance of Nairobi, the others mentioned the other significant changes, and some of the things that we're taking for granted today, such as the idea that all issues are women's issues and that women's rights are human rights, were really quite alien concepts. I remember that I put together an anthology of essays called Faith and Freedom, Women's Human Rights in the Muslim World, which was launched at Beijing, and I remember that my editor sort of deleted the word women's rights or human rights. She thought this was some ridiculous concept, but we kept it and it worked. So the moving up to Beijing, actually not just our own three conferences, but also the others, such as the environment, the population, the human rights, conferences were extraordinarily important in, as was said earlier, in helping us mobilize ourselves, helping us create our networks, helping us to share experiences, helping us to understand, not only understand basically, but appreciate our diversity. I remember that by the time that we got to Beijing, a lot of us from the Muslim majority countries were asking for the right to religious education, which seemed to some of our colleagues something that, you know, didn't seem to make sense, but they supported that because we all understood that the way our religions are interpreted and the way that our values are defined by religious authorities are what affects our lives so closely and so importantly. So we all were able to give the support necessary to each other. So the process that brought us to Beijing also made it possible for us to be really rather well equipped to take on to the next stage. And we are, of course, also helped by science and by technology. We can do things today that we were never able to do. Remember, it wasn't too far back for some of us who were at Mexico and Nairobi and other conferences that we were communicating by snail mail, we were communicating by fax, and to be able to reach so many so fast through Skype and through technology has made solidarity and partnership possible for us. So we're in a pretty good place, actually. Although, of course, our accomplishments, such as the legislation against violence that has come about, we have extraordinary legislation in a large number of countries. We have at least 89 countries who have some form of legislation against domestic violence. We have at least 104 countries that have legislation on that makes marital rape prosecutable. We have 90 countries at least that have laws against harassment. But still that great gap, that great horrendous gap remains. And we are all haunted by numbers such as 500,000 young girls below the age of 18 who are trafficked every year. Something like 2 million women who are subjected to genital mutilation. 5,000 women that are killed by family members in the name of honor. One out of every three women who have been somehow subjected to violence within the family. So all of those still remain. But, you know, as we, Gertrude said this morning, we have reached as a movement, after 15 years following Beijing, the age of puberty, we have to celebrate our arrival at adulthood as a movement. And so we have to look to the positive side as well as the negative side. And I was thinking that, as Martin Luther King said, I have a dream. He didn't say, I have a nightmare, you know. So we have to think of our dreams and what we wish for ourselves in the future. So the dream, of course, is a world that is peaceful and just and allows for people to realize their capabilities, to have security, to have hopes for their future and the future of their children, and to be free of fear and free of want. Now, that dream, which is actually, once realized, the only kind of a situation where violence against women will be completely eradicated. So to have that type of a world come about, I think we have arrived at a stage where we can have a larger ambition. We can really look to a wider goal for ourselves. And that wider goal refers to the rearrangement of human relationships, restructuring of the architecture of human relationships in a way that we could actually reach that goal. Now, we were just listening to an eloquent statement on patriarchy and on the culture of patriarchy. And we have to remember, when we talk about culture, we're talking about aspects of culture which are loved by every one of us. Aspects of culture that have to do with our celebrations, with our cuisine, with our dress, with our rites of passage, and so forth. But there are also aspects of culture which are limiting, which are stifling, and which encourage segregation and exclusion. And those aspects in every country across the world have to change. And every change that has come about that has to do with a better life for everybody has had within it culture change. Now, in order to change from the culture of patriarchy to a culture which allows eradication of violence, we need to realize that a new form of interrelationship is necessary, which begins with each individual human being, male and female. We have to realize that we're all indoctrinated in situations where, as a child, we are subordinated to a parent in an authoritarian way in many parts of the world, and even throughout the world, one can say. The male happens to play that role. In the community, we have the same type of arrangements. Some places it's elders, in other places it's those who are materially better off. In school, we are told what is the truth, what is knowledge, what is information, and we take notes and we give back that information as close as possible to what we are told. within government, the same thing is repeated, and every aspect of our culture, no matter which part of the world, every aspect of our religion, no matter which religion, every aspect of our arts, from fiction to films to everything else, to opera, reinforce this structuring that is based on hierarchy, on power without any kind of connection to ethics or morality, and on aggression. So if we want to change this, we have that holistic vision that changes every aspect of our relationship. I should have actually gone up there because Afaf couldn't reach me so easily. But anyway, I will try to obey. The cultural loss. So in order to change this, I need to finish an example. And there are many examples, but I'd like to draw on an example of how change has come about in an area that is very important in a large portion of the world, which is Muslim-majority societies. And that has to do with family laws. And family laws in these countries, in these societies, are very much connected to violence. From child marriage, to polygamy, to permission to work, to divorce, to permission to travel, all of that has to do with the family laws. In 2004, after 10 years of struggle, our partner organization, the Democratic Association of Moroccan Women, ADFM, led a collaborative of organizations in Tunisia, Algeria, and Morocco, and they went through the process of change of these laws. What they did is very instructive. They went to the public and tried to gain information about priorities that women held, what was more important to them. They did deep research in cultural areas, in scientific areas, in legal areas, as well as international and human rights law and conventions. They provided this information back to the grassroots so that the grassroots could make up its own mind to choose how they wanted to put together their view of what they wanted and how they wanted to transfer that to others. They opened a dialogue with policymakers on the basis of mobilized grassroots populations, which gave them power, not just because they had a great idea, but because they had power behind them. And they got men, not just policymakers, but men in the grassroots to support them. They went through that process, and they were able to pass legislation, which was not perfect, but it was much better than what they had. They accepted that, thinking that they would go to the next incremental step for change. Now, that process was documented, and we translated it into English and Persian. In 2006, the Iranian movement began doing the same thing, a movement called the 1 Million Signatures Campaign, which not only wanted to get 1 million women to sign on to change in discriminatory laws, but as they say themselves repeatedly, it was to sign on 1 million activists. And they were extraordinarily successful. They weren't successful in changing the laws. It's not easy to change laws in Iran these days, because some countries agree that there are standards that they should follow, and then they try to say that they are actually following them. There are some countries which just don't even believe that women's equality is something that they should aspire to. So unfortunately, that's how the situation is. So it was not that they were able to change laws, but they were able to bring about the kind of consciousness raising, the kind of awareness, the kind of belief in democratic interaction that a number of the candidates took up the Women's Collaborative Platform, and they actually were at the forefront of the democratic movement in last summer's elections. And I see Ahok getting really, really nervous now. So I just want to end with this, that the idea of consciousness raising, of knowledge gathering, of communications with the public, everything from door to door, speaking to individual women, to using the technology to raise awareness, to mobilizing international community in support of these actions, and having power of the grassroots to deal with the policymakers and to be inclusive of men. These are the ways that we have found following our shared vision explained in the Beijing platform to reach our goals. We are not near it, but we still have a long way to go. But we have to remember that centuries and centuries we have lived this other way. And before we get to that just and free world, we have to struggle on, we have to be together, we have to keep our humor, and we have to never give up. And I would just end with one quotation. As an Iranian, as a Persian speaker, I can't leave you all without quoting our mystical poet Rumi, who said, "Among all the talk of wrongdoing and rightdoing and this thinking and that thinking, there is a field out there. I'll meet you there." And I think that this particular forum is one of those forums that one always reaches at the United Nations, which reminds one of that field where right doing, wrong doing, this and that, and aggression and difference are put aside. We meet each other there. And I'm glad to be here with you. Thank you.
This speech was brought to you by ISIS International. For more audio reports, please tune into the ISIS website at www.isisinternational.org.